Hello and welcome back to the LIBF Trade Finance Podcast, where we interview leading figures in the world of trade from around the globe to gain insight and discuss the issues facing industry today and the future. We also offer a range of trade and transaction banking qualifications and training. To find out more, please go to libf.ac.uk/trade. Now on with the episode. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the LIBF Trade Podcast, and it's good to be back in the offices in London of LIBF beside Tower Bridge. The last time I was here in person was February 2020, so that was quite a while ago, and a lot of things have happened since then. And today I'm joined by three people, so there's four of us in the room, which is also a novelty as well, which is nice. I'm joined by Johnny Carruthers, Director at BPL Global, Portfolio Trade Credit Insurance. And James Cook is the Assistant Director at BPL Global. Oslem Ozuner, Head of Operations, Finance, E-Commerce at Allianz Trade. And Oslem and I, we've just established that we used to work together at the same time at HSBC, which is not a rarity in the trade world, to be honest, but former colleague. So welcome to everybody. Now, for people that like hearing my voice, you're going to be disappointed with this podcast because it's a subject matter I'm not really too familiar with. So I'm going to be quite quiet. A lot of people will be going relief for that. But we're looking at trade credit insurance and e-commerce. And I thought we would just, for some people, including myself, and just what do we need about, what do we mean about trade credit insurance? I do have a certain idea, but maybe James, you want to just give us an idea of what that involves. And then maybe we can expand on what your various jobs are and give some light for our listeners.
Sure. Trade credit at its most simple level is business-to-business insurance of transactions. It can be on a single risk basis. People might be familiar with the Lloyd's of London insurance market, or where I specialise at BPL on the portfolio side. So this is where companies insure their entire book of receivables from ground up, which is also known as a whole turnover basis, or on an excess of loss basis, where there is more retention on the part of the insured, and these receivables can then obviously be financed, which is where the banking angle comes in, which is something we've seen increasingly with capital relief requirements. And at BPL Global, we are the broker, so we sit between the client, who can be a bank or a commercial commodity trader or other commercial entity, and the insurer, such as Allianz Trade.
Okay, thank you very much. So you're looking at sort of a rolling book, as it were. There's, you know, throughout the whole year, everything's insured.
Yeah, typically, if you insure the portfolio, then it will be for example, a 12-month period, and there will be transactions rolling throughout the year as you perform your typical business, whatever trade sector that might be in, selling to other businesses on credit terms, deferred credit.
Cool. Thanks. And then, so then Allianz Oslem fits in how into that whole piece.
So I usually call trade credit life insurance for companies. So it's making sure that companies pay to other companies on time. And if they don't, then insurer kicks in. A broker plays an important role, making sure that their client is well represented and sufficient coverage is given. We play a big role in kind of mediating global trade. I think the latest exposure Allianz Trade had on companies was over 1 trillion euros. So we are an important player. We sit a bit silently at the back, but when times are rough, we are there to indemnify clients.
A lot of people will know your name from your sponsor stadiums, don't you? Football stadiums around the world. So there's a few.
Exactly. Yeah, Allianz Arena.
Because that's the thing with the name, people will know it. And people aren't so familiar with the LIBF name, but they do know about CDCS as our products. But I think most people will be very familiar with your company name. And then we're trying to get more familiarity with BPL Global. Johnny?
Yeah, so BPL is a specialist trade credit and political risk insurance broker. Our background is certainly more in the political risk arena. I head up the team that specializes in portfolio trade credit insurance. We've been going for nearly 40 years now. We're a fully independent, employee-owned organisation, and the client service and the client really sits at the heart of what we do. So our interaction with the insurance market and with our clients and prospects is always with that in mind.
Yeah, because obviously trade credit insurance with banks involved, it's not a new thing. I mean, I think you guys know, and some of the listeners who have been in banks for over 30 years, but it ebbed and flowed, and also dependent on specific countries. So like in Canada, we used it a lot. Hong Kong in the 90s, not so much. So it just depend. But so how is it going in terms of, you know, as I say, it's not a new thing. Maybe you could expand on that.
Oh, yeah, sure. I think it isn't. And for a long time, then companies would be insuring their trade receivables and getting banks to finance those receivables, primarily to get better access to financing and get those receivables off their balance sheet. And I think that happened for quite a long time. As time has gone on, then we've moved into a slightly more Basel world where there's slightly more demand from the banks to take the lead as the insured in the relationship, which comes with its own challenges. You know, the compliance with the regulations, the insurance at its heart is a conditional product. It's not a guarantee, but interpreting those regulations and making sure that an insurance policy can give the bank what it needs in order to get the regulatory capital relief while still maintaining the integrity of the product is something which has happened over time, and the insurance market has slowly but surely got to grips with the way in which banks want to use the insurance market as well. I think that's something that there was a little bit of skepticism initially around the way in which banks may want to treat the insurance market, but that's something which is, thankfully, everybody's on the same page there. I think as time has gone on, then those relationships have really developed. And more recently, things have developed where banks not only as an insured themselves, but also as a loss payee between on the policy between the corporate and their insurer, the development has been done around wordings to still enable the bank to get that regulatory capital relief whilst not being a primary party to the insurance policy. And that's something which is relatively innovative and something which is recent developments. And that capital relief really is one of the main drivers we see from banks in Europe. It's certainly less value in the US, but certainly in Europe, it's one of the main reasons why banks are looking towards the trade credit insurance market for receivables.
The thing that you mentioned about off balance sheet, is that because I remember, and maybe my memory is dated, but is it not dependent on who it was giving you advice as to whether it was off balance sheet or not?
To a point, yes. I think one of the wonderful things about the regulatory environment we live in is that each institution has their own slightly different interpretation of the rules.
Yes, it's not black and white.
It's not black and white by any stretch of the imagination. There are different classifications that can be put into place, but and I'm sure that Ozzy will testify that different banks certainly have their own requirements when it comes to things like policy wording. Specific clauses need to be amended in a certain way to make sure that is possible, and that can be really down to the individual wording of the clause and to whether it's acceptable or not in their own views. And of course, large banks in particular are quite hot on their legal resource and what the way in which this has been looked at.
Well, I suppose that the legal team have to be there. That's their job, right? So, I mean, I'm not going to ask Ozlem to name names, but I wasn't aware that there would be different, different banks would sort of discuss the wording and you'd be tailoring them, would you?
Yeah, this would be because of the internal rating system. So there might be a standard rating system that the bank uses for capital relief with the regulator, or they may be using their own internal system, which makes it a bit complex. But, we are kind of used to it now by talking with banks, legal departments, regulators, and also sometimes banks require capital relief in different parts of the world, mainly in Europe. Then you speak with a different local regulator, to get the same relief. But as John said, we have been speaking closely with banks. Brokers have played a very critical role. We have exemplary wordings that we use, and more banks are now looking into insurance as a almost like a guarantee, and the regulators are ticking off the box to say the capital relief would be provided, and this is bringing financial institutions like insurance and banks closer, and in the end corporates benefit, of course.
So you're able to speak to regulators, because there'll be people listening to this podcast going, oh, you're lucky, because I think it's a good thing to be able to do that. But not in every country is that possible. That regulators are diverse, obviously. So that's encouraging that you're able to speak to them. I always find that anything like that, if you can have a dialogue, it makes it much easier for everybody.
Exactly. I think regulators are very aware that insurance is a product that's protecting non-payment of risk, right? And anything that's helping to mitigate that risk is something that regulators are quite careful about. So, yeah.
So what, in terms of claimable events, maybe we could just convince somebody in the room, explain what we mean by that. And is there any kind of events that would suddenly... I mean, would when the big container ship was stuck in the Suez Canal, would that have been things that would have affected claims? Because I suppose the goods got delivered in the end, but the delays and stuff.
So when we talk about trade credit insurance, particularly on a portfolio basis, then there's three main perils that the product is covering. There's insolvency, so that's where the buyer, the obligor, is able to pay because they're insolvent, they will bust. There's protracted default, where it's a non-payment for a long period of time. That can either be because they don't have the funds to pay, or it's willful, as in they have the funds but have chosen not to pay. And then there's also political risks, which in the portfolio world is normally a standard addition to the policy, which covers against a spectrum of political risks as well. So they're the three main reasons. So the example you gave of a vessel being caught in the Suez Canal, chances are that was probably resulted in more delays than actual non-payment events. But certainly when we talk about some of the more high-profile cases that have happened over the past few years in Asia, then there's typically been a fraud element to them. It's a very important state of fraud. Is not typically covered by a credit insurance policy, fraud by the insured. If the buyer has not paid you because there's an underlying fraud going on, then that typically is covered. So that's something which I think is important to note.
Well, that's where my little bit of knowledge is not a good thing, because I'm looking at it from the trade ops side. When I'm looking at insurance, a policy for the goods going from A to B, but of course you're talking more about the business side. Exactly. So that, I'm so apologies, because that's a little bit of knowledge, because we spoke to the chap about in an earlier edition about the vessels, and then he's written a whole thing about that, but it's a totally different angle. So. But one thing that we're looking at in terms of this whole podcast, we're looking at the e-commerce and the insurer of technology, because I don't think we can be talk about anything nowadays without advancements. And I've certainly seen in the past few years advancements, even at LIBF, we've had our qualifications have all gone online, which was a total necessity because nobody could go to do exams in person. That thing in trade side, the ICC UK are doing a lot on the digital trade, pushing forward that agenda. I'm sure in the insurance world, there's a whole lot of technology going on about that. Who wants to talk about that? Maybe Johnny, do you want to cover that?
No, I'm happy to. I think technology in general is a very good thing when it comes to the subject we're talking about today. I think anything that can aid transparency for interested parties, gives visibility to insurers and to banks as to what is their financing, is always going to be a positive development. And there's been a lot of work done thinking about systems that plug into the seller's accounts receivable system, so you can have real-time data surrounding invoices and payments that are being generated, whereas previously it would have been done always historically on a spreadsheet or something like that. So all those things are always going to aid in there. And I think going into the sort of Osmond's field of speciality, then you also have this rise of the fintech platforms, and maybe that's something which is worth talking about.
Yeah, I think it all started during COVID when we as consumers started ordering goods or services online. It was really easy to get all these services at the click of a button. What B2B trade is experiencing today is a similar trend because companies have realized that they can actually sell goods and services online, and these goods and services can be insured real time online. Previously with insurance companies, you know, we had to underwrite the risk, which means that we are talking about maybe larger credit limits required for provision of goods and services. But in online trade, we are seeing smaller tickets, smaller purchases, and we are seeing all new buyers coming into a platform of a company to buy these services, which means that the company can actually increase sales, can have a better customer journey because it's happening online. Everybody has to be quite quick in terms of their risk decisioning. And the consumer is, or the customer is very happy because they have kind of concluded the sale in a few minutes. Of course, the infrastructure and the technology that is required to do this requires a lot of investment, which has been done by my company, Allianz. We use APIs. These are, you know, softwares talking to each other. So a corporate customer is coming with an API call to ask for a certain limit on a buyer. And that buyer is actually at that time shopping in the website. So as soon as they are coming to check out, they are previously used to paying with credit cards, but this time they see the option of an insurance, which allows them to take credit risk on a longer term basis.
So in the background, then your system is effectively doing a live assessment of the buyer. And if they are eligible for credit insurance, then that's it, available to them as an option to then buy now, pay later.
Exactly, yeah.
To the checkout. Which...
So while they are actually filling in the shopping basket, like consumers do, the insurer is making sure that credit limit is approved so that when they are coming to pay out, they are not surprised that a credit limit has not been granted. So that credit limit is ready when they are using the payment option. So that brings us a bit closer to the payments system providers in a way.
But that must be, you know, if to be doing that must be so quick, and the systems you've got, well, stating the obvious, very high tech, because it has to be instantaneous, right?
Exactly. And maybe what role do the banks play here is the banks or the financiers pay to the seller immediately so that the seller receives the payment and the buyer gets deferred payment terms. So everybody has a role to play, and it happens real time online.
So in terms of, once again, statistics, what's the take-up rate of that kind of product when it's offered there? Because people have the choice, right? It's not obligatory.
So. Sure. This is quite new. So the insurance companies that are, you know, embedding themselves into e-commerce is probably a 4 or 5 year concept. So I think it's important for us to work with our brokers to get more companies using the product. But I can say that the take-up ratio is very high because previously when a buyer was coming to the website of a seller, they were probably getting credit card or cash options, which are relatively short term. With credit insurance, these payment terms can be custom made and can be at a longer period. So that's an advantage for the buyer.
Yeah. Almost every sector is applicable. If it's hardware, DIY supplies, or builders, merchants, but it could apply to electronics, it could apply to any kind of platform where the buyers are engaging with their seller online. And from the bank's perspective as well, it's a big opportunity potentially because these are receivables that would not necessarily have existed before. So this is an enhancement and new transactions that can be purchased by the bank, financed by the bank, and insured.
Yeah, and most of the buyers that come into the platforms are SMEs. And I think we were discussing this before the podcast that SMEs find it quite difficult to get banking services. They have to shop around. They don't have enough personnel to do everything themselves. Within the system, the SME actually comes into the platform, gets the credit limit, their salary is paid in advance, and then they get the deferred payment term. So I think there was an Accenture report which said that 41% of SMEs are very open to working with digital platforms and service providers, which shows that, you know, times are changing and everybody is getting closer to technology if it is helping to the growth of their business.
I've been to few conferences now that we can go to them again, and it's always about supporting SMEs. So every conference is talking about that and about the trade funding gap. So you're actually helping that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was going to say SMEs are a very important sector of the market for the insurance industry, the credit insurance industry, but it's not always the easiest or the most profitable. You can be busy fools a little bit sometimes with the smaller companies, but that have high demands in terms of their customers, and this is a way of engaging with them in a way that is potentially a bit more attractive for insurers, because it's a bit more loss remote, but still providing that these smaller companies with insurance support.
And these two into the banking world as well. I think the banking sector is also traditionally has wanting to support SMEs is always a challenge. So I think that these three things together, with the development in e-commerce, the insurance market support, and the demand for financing that comes with it, it should be a win-win for the market.
And then I presume around this, there's all this, the KYC, the kind of, because with anything online, people are always very nervous about that. And that's already part of that, isn't that right?
I think that's one of the challenges for embedded finance in general, because the buyer who is coming to the platform is not most of the time known to the seller. So there must be the technology that is available to recognize that buyer, to make sure that it is who they say they are, to avoid fraudulent transactions. And also, this has to be done before the checkout process. So there's a lot of technology that has been developed to identify the IP addresses, to make sure that KYC is done on the buyer. And embedded finance actually brings all of these providers together. So banks play a role with their own compliance. As insurers players, we play a role, but as well as the technology providers who have excellent technology to really recognize the players in the platform.
Because you've been using that word embedded finance, and when we're doing the kind of little sales pitch for this podcast, well, I'll be using that because it's quite the buzzword. And the way technology works, if I use that, it will maybe draw some traffic. But embedded finance, and we've been talking before, it is a very much a buzzword. And it wasn't really an expression I was too aware of until recently.
Yeah, that's true. And I think we are all learning from each other because, as insurance companies, we have been, in the market for hundreds of years. We have brought probably history of understanding customer behaviors. But these tech-savvy companies also bring another angle in terms of, data analytics, AI, and other elements that kind of help to the customer in the end.
So there is an AI angle on this as well.
Yeah, I think most of the platforms that do buy now, pay later use analytics and AI in their systems.
So some of my colleagues, when I use AI, I have to spell it out. So artificial intelligence,
yes.
That's my colleagues in marketing, yeah. Who say I always have to say the whole thing. But I think people on this thing, they never know AI, let's be honest. that's fascinating. In terms of, what Allianz Trade has been doing, in very innovative in the whole e-commerce space. Maybe there's some things you can talk about, and Johnny and James, that one more innovation. So that embedded finance is a buzzword, but what is the kind of things that are you're also looking at the moment?
I think we will be looking more into e-commerce in terms of how we can develop it further with our own technology and our data analytics. We have been underwriting risk for, as I said, more than 100 of years. So we have accumulated a very large database across the globe. It will be important for us to help some of the countries that do not have open banking services, for us to identify more and more buyers so that we can extend credit risk to them. So it's all about our own learning process, but also helping other countries to open up their systems, their compliance, so that there can be more transparency for companies.
Because when you're talking about, you know, over 100 years of data, I've always wondered, this data's only been collected, okay, you may have books somewhere, but how much of data have you got, like, in a technological sense that goes back? Because, you know, there is information, you know, I worked at HSBC and we had archives, yeah, and there's information there. But, you know, in terms of actual data, how far back is it collected in a sort of technological sense?
So in trade credit insurance, we have to hold a lot of historical data because we are almost insuring similar companies in different parts of the world. And we also need to make sure that we promote exports. So it could be the export to one country where we need to know the buyer in that specific country. So we are established across the globe in many offices with risk underwriters sitting close proximity to the buyers. And there we collect the data. But in the e-commerce world, it's going to be a bit different because every data is, you know, there in the platform. You can actually have access to invoices. You can do many data analytics to understand the behavior of the buyer, to see if it's a recurring customer, what kind of risk profile they have. So the world is really opening before our eyes for us to do that.
In terms of all that data as well, I think, you know, from an underwriting perspective, then financial information, payment performance, all that kind of information that insurers such as Allianz will have access to, it loses relevance over time. So the payment performance, everyone had a poor year financially in 2020 into 2021 because of the pandemic when global trade almost ground to a halt. So there's less, the focus for the industry as a whole at this moment in time is actually more about how can we be a little bit more forward looking, looking at the strength of these businesses based on their how they've weathered the storm of the pandemic and the other economic challenges that we're currently facing, and also how well set up they are to then, you know, move on from that into the future. And that's really where the market as a whole has also been looking when it comes to their risk underwriting decisions. And I think also to Oslam's point about the opportunities there is a responsibility on us as brokers, on the insurance market, and the banks as well, to also then try and source these opportunities. Technological advancements such as this really do open another door in terms of where the insurance market can connect with trade. And so trying to search out those opportunities, those merchants that wouldn't necessarily have been candidates for trade credit insurance previously, those merchants wouldn't necessarily have been candidates to have their receivables financed before, they're out there. So it's also about taking these new developments and using them for good, and to try and find new opportunities for all parties.
One of the things we're talking about the technology side, and we're looking, you know, people listen to this, they always want tips on, you know, what the future holds. We haven't actually got a crystal ball in here. With the work you're doing, what do you see as what the future will hold in terms of whether it be a technological development or on the product side in your world? What do you think?
For me, I would say that B2B trade is going to move online quite substantially, which means that companies have to probably either invest in their IT technology more, but they can actually join a platform and become a customer of a platform who does many of the services for them. So I do hear a lot of companies saying, you know, I don't need to do invoicing myself because the platform takes care of that. I don't need to do credit management to with large teams because the platform takes care of that. So with this concept of partnership of many entities with their own maybe strong points, it's becoming easier for companies to grow their sales and also become sustainable to pay for the buyers. So I would say that everybody benefits technology.
What I hear about generally when I'm in different countries, maybe a GTR conference, to talk about the SME side, and that the companies that are using this technology, they're about making it as simple as possible, because the people listening on this call have maybe worked for big banks and they're kind of used to having these fancy systems, but that's not really what the world is like. We kind of spoiled my HSBC in Santander. The customers, they want things they can just use on their phone. They can take a photo of something, create invoices or purchase orders, or show product. And then by using it in a bank system, but they, what they want is to make it as simple as possible. Because you know, what's the needs of an enormous corporate is very different from a small SME. And is that being looked at in terms of different offerings?
Yeah, I think for the SME, they can use an option called guest checkout, which is actually a plug and play solution where they don't need to even, you know, implement any IT technology themselves. They can use the platform to buy goods and services with that functionality. And later on, if it's going to be a recurring sale, then, you know, they can use other functionalities such as invoicing, credit management, and other services. So it is making the life of the SMEs quite easy to purchase goods and services online for the sellers as well, because, you know, banks will be strongly advocating this to pay to them right away because they know them as their customers. But banks would also be interested to work with the buyers that are potentially coming to that platform as potential customers.
And that's where I think, you know, these fintech platforms, the platforms themselves, really come into their own, because they're almost intermediating the large traditional banks as well as some of the new challenger smaller banks that are the fancies that are out there with this new world. And the better the technology, the ease of use, the user experience is very important in that. And the direction of travel appears to be quite clear in that data is going to be key going forwards. This e-commerce world is going to continue to grow and grow and grow. So for the larger financial institutions, they've kind of got to embrace it, otherwise they'll get left behind. And for the smaller challenges that are coming to the fore, then, you know, they're really trying to forge their way in the market. So, you know, those two things together will really push things forward.
Well, I've been twice in Egypt this year, and one of the things that the banks have, like, it's a regulation that not everybody is meeting, but they have a certain percentage. I should really remember. I think it's about 25% of their finance has to be to SMEs. And not everybody's meeting that target, but they're moving towards the right direction. So what you're talking about here gives that ability to make it easier for the banks as well to provide that finance. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yes. It is bringing SMEs closer to the banks, and it is doing that with technology, which means that SME will find it easier to work with the platform and to get deferred payment terms, which also helps to their cash flow and capital management. So I think what insurance as a role is playing here is to make sure that non-payment risk is mitigated, which is another comfort for the banks as well. So yeah, it's really a win-win.
We're sort of coming to the close at the moment, but, you know, we've got a bit of time in terms of, you know, we're looking sort of trying to look a bit at the future. So maybe as we sort of look to sort of wrap up and summarize, maybe you can talk about some of the things that you see happening in the near future with what you're doing.
Sure. I mean, I think as far as the trade credit insurance market goes, then we'll be seeing investment in terms of new insurers looking at expanding their teams in the trade credit insurance market. So there's, Allianz's got a whole new team dedicated to
e-commerce. So there's a growth in the teams, because that's, for the people who are listening, some of these people will be students and be looking for jobs.
Yes, yes. E-commerce is a new line of business for Allianz. So we are investing into people as well as, you know, learning ourselves. So yeah.
So this morning I was speaking to our first year students at LIB. We have a university in, would you believe, banking and finance. And I was asking them what kind of roles that they were looking to go into. And, you know, there'll be some of that experience. But the people that you're looking for, what kind of skills? Because it would be very different from when I started work. You know, what kind of skills if somebody who's going to be looking at kind of an insurance e-commerce? What kind of things are you looking for in these people?
So we would be really looking to see some data scientists who would work with our data to help us understand some, you know, behavioral metrics, as well as to understand how we can, you know, underwrite in a better way. In turn, of course, we will be giving them the insurance, you know, trainings. So technology and insurance will marry each other. And people who are tech savvy, but who would like to also understand how risk is underwritten, it's a perfect role for them.
So sorry, I did, Johnny, I did go off on a tangent there, but, you know, people that hear about this potential extra jobs in the future. That's encouraging.
No, absolutely. Any opportunity to try and plug the insurance market as a career choice is one we should take, because nobody, and I do mean nobody, chooses a career in insurance. You end up falling into it for various reasons.
The students I was talking about, the same with trade, were saying that I fell into it by sort of accident. But I think with both trades and insurance, if you kind of see that as a path, you know, and go for it, as it were, there's a lot more opportunity, as opposed, that's what we can help people, as opposed to just falling by accident, be more aware of what's going on and think of it as an opportunity. Because what I find interesting with the stuff we've been talking about previously, you know, the factors that go on, you know, the political side, you know, that's, it's all relates to what you're doing.
Absolutely. And it's a narrow field, but it's one with a very broad subject matter within it. And there's lots of opportunities for people, people who are very interested in the e-commerce world, as Osman mentioned, or if you're interested in data, if you have a mathematical mind, you have an analytical mind in particular. And also people who have those geopolitical interests as well. There's, you know, we cover trade globally. There's always something going on somewhere. There's always an election going on or something happening, which is then going to affect our clients and the world in which they operate in. So it's a very diverse range of skills that can be used within the insurance market, I'm absolutely sure.
And that's the problem with that kind of job, is when you turn on the radio in the morning, it's not Radio 1, you listen to the pop music, you have to listen to the news. So
yeah, we do the games sometimes. Yeah. We count ourselves as almost like a counter-cyclical market, though, that you know, when things are going wrong, you know, when there have been problems, when there's, you know, economical difficulties, when there's claims going on in the market, that's when we're at our busiest, and that's when the profile rises a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. So, James, what do you think?
Well, I was just going to add to that I think when things are looking a bit dicey in the world and claims are on the up, the embedded finance is something that the insurers are going to be very interested in, because it adds diversification to the risk. These transactions individually are very small, so by having as many of these as possible through a platform, then that diversification means that the numbers can get bigger, but the risk doesn't necessarily have to, which hopefully keeps claims levels down.
Okay, thank you. Maybe the last word from you then, Osman.
Yeah, most of the young people, when you interview them for roles, they ask, you know, what good this company does, right? For sustainability, for the world, for the ecosystem, etc. So I would say that, you know, we are really helping world trade to grow and making sure that our customers sleep well at night, because we are, you know, with them in terms of non-payment risk. And now we try to do this with technology, which hopefully, as James said, allows SMEs to benefit from the, you know, insurance side, and for them to grow sustainably for the future as well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that's interesting, the point you made about what, let's say, younger people, what they're looking for in their employers. So we at LIBF ask the same questions, and we're trying, that's where what we do is we're supporting people with their education, but it's good to see that you're also doing that as well. And so when I came here this morning, I didn't actually think about what would be the next podcast. Maybe there's a link into our next podcast about ESG, because that's very much a hot topic. Yeah. But we've also got from today, we've got the embedded finance. So that'll be, we'll put that up on the website, and that will get people like a buzzword. But thanks, everybody. And safe travels back, and safe travels to everybody around the world who's listening to this. So thanks very much. Goodbye. Do you work in the world of trade and transaction banking? Maybe you aspire to work in that sector. Our qualifications are recognised internationally and studied in over 90 countries. Thousands of people qualify with us and progress their careers every year. We have 6 qualifications that focus on international trade finance, LCs, guarantees, financial crime, payments, and supply chain finance. Wherever you are in your career, we might have the solution to take you to the next level. Find out more at libf.ac.uk/trade.